gentleman on the original committee that had invited the Veterans Affairs Committee from Washington to Forest Hills. In those days, we dined, we drank scotch with a little water, and at 1 o'clock in the morning, we had St. Albans Extended Care Center. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry. You have Mr. Malpiers with you. Right. Mr. Malpiers, excuse me, sir. You're in charge of network number 2.
Right.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
I think the way we're going to do this, and I'd like to thank the group for the invitation. Delighted to be here. This is really our first, at least my first opportunity to meet with individuals on a statewide basis. The way we're going to handle this is that Fred has a fairly generic statement, and we'll get into some specificity about VISN or network number 2, and then I'll comment on network number 3, and then we'll gladly respond to any questions that any of you may have.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Chairman DeMarco. I want to express my appreciation to you, as Jim said, and to the council members and to the veterans and veterans organizations present for this opportunity to appear before you. It is a distinct honor and personal privilege to represent the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and participate in this forum. The Veterans Service Organizations in New York have a long and meritorious record of representation and advocacy for veterans, and it's been the VA's distinct pleasure and honor to be partners with them in providing quality health care services to veterans in New York State. We've been asked to provide the Council with an overview of the services provided by the Veterans Health Administration to the 1.5 million veterans in New York, special programs initiated to foster the improvement of the quality and quantity of both acute and long-term chronic care health services to veterans, and to comment on any other facts or developments that we believe may help you understand better our long-standing mission, our current capabilities, and existing and exciting new programs for the delivery of quality services to veterans. In the event that my statement runs too long, please just stop me. I will try to edit it. We have provided you with the full copy plus some additional materials that would like to ask to be included in the record if that's appropriate. During 1995, there were 68,000 hospital discharges from the 12,000 medical centers in New York, VA medical centers in New York. In addition, over 463 veterans received acute inpatient care at the community at VA expense. Also in 1995, 4,445 veterans received long-term care in the VA and non-VA nursing homes and domiciliaries. Likewise, last year, VHA provided almost 5 million clinic visits and other outpatient services to veterans in the state. Historically, VA patients have been largely men and are older with more acute and complex illnesses. As a group, VA patients traditionally have fewer resources. Consistent with the changes in the composition of the military, VA medical centers in New York care for a growing population of women veterans. Last year, 26,500 women received either inpatient or outpatient care at VA facilities, which represents almost 12% of the total number of veterans receiving care. Statewide VA medical centers have endeavored to meet the gender-specific needs of women veterans. VHA is also the nation's largest trainer of healthcare professionals. Through our affiliations with medical schools and academic medical centers in New York, as well as other research institutions, the VA medical centers in New York continue to be a major teaching and research asset across the entire spectrum of medicine in New York. Everyone is aware of the VA's national reputation in medical research. New York can share that tradition and pride in knowing that the cardiac pacemaker was invented and first implanted at the VA Medical Center in Buffalo, and that Nobel Prize winning research was conducted in radioisotopes at the VA Medical Center Bronx. VHA also serves as contingency backup support to the Department of Defense Medical Services, and during national emergencies, supports federal response efforts. In addition to the VA's commitment to improving the quality of veterans' health care. There are several other factors that prompt change within VHA. Chief among these factors are the profound changes in the way health care has come to be provided in the United States in recent years. Technological advances, economic factors, demographic changes, and the rise of managed health care, among other things, have caused a dramatic shift away from inpatient care and a corresponding increase in outpatient care. VA medical centers in New York are adapting their service delivery to align with the changes occurring in the larger healthcare system. President Clinton's initiative to reinvent and streamline government mandates that VA examine its organizational practices and become a more agile and cost-efficient healthcare delivery system. Further, in recent years, numerous government and non-government reports have consistently concluded that fundamental changes are needed in the VHA healthcare system to make it more patient responsive and efficient. Among the principal changes recommended for VHA are: one, to allow veterans to use healthcare resources at the provider of choice, including the VA, and require HMOs to pay for healthcare services rendered to veteran members. Two, redistribution of healthcare resources to better meet veterans' needs. Three, the use of innovative approaches in improving veterans' access to health care. And three, continued decentralization of decision-making and operations. While everything else VHA is tasked to do will continue to be important, teaching, research, backup for the Department of Defense, and response to domestic emergencies, all these things will be done, and all of VHA's support and delivery system will operate on the basis of patients first. Fundamental changes in the way veterans' health care is provided are taking place. These will include increasing ambulatory care access points and a marked emphasis on providing primary care, decentralized decision making, and integrating the delivery assets to provide a seamless continuum of care. The structural vehicle to do this, as has already been referred to, is the Veterans Integrated Service Network. In VHA headquarters, the emphasis is shifting from control of processes to monitoring of outcomes. Rigid decentralization of operations and decision making is being replaced by decentralization and increased accountability at the delivery level. Headquarters is focusing on developing system-wide policies and practice parameters and defining expected levels of performance. At the same time, leadership in the field will be held accountable for meeting the defined levels of patient satisfaction, access, quality, and efficiency. The new structure is based on the concept of coordinating and integrating VHA's healthcare delivery system and the creation of the 22 Veterans Integrated Service Networks. The network structure is derived from a paradigm of organizational management that focuses on quality, patient care, customer satisfaction, innovation, excellence, and accountability. This reorganization embodies a fundamentally new approach toward the delivery of veterans' health care services. The basic budgetary and planning unit of health care delivery is shifting from individual medical centers to geographic areas encompassing populations of veteran beneficiaries, and decision-making authority is shifting closer to those affected by the decision. These geographic areas and their veteran populations are defined on the basis of natural patient referral patterns, numbers of beneficiaries and facilities needed to support and provide primary, secondary, and tertiary care, and to a lesser extent, political jurisdictional boundaries such as state borders. The networks are designed to promote the benefits of an integrated healthcare system. Services are being provided via better integration and through strategic alliances among neighboring VA medical centers, contractual arrangements with private providers, sharing agreements with other government providers, the direct purchase of services from the private sector, and many other such relationships. The new network structure places a premium on improved patient services, cost reduction, process improvement, outcome management, and value engineering. As an integrated system of care, the network model promotes the expansion of community-based access points for primary care. The traditional hospital or medical center will remain an important but less central component of a larger community-based network of care. In this system, emphasis is being placed on the integration of acute and long-term inpatient and ambulatory care so as to provide a continuum of services. Consistent with this, we would like to share with you the mission and vision statements of the Upstate New York VA Healthcare Network as an example of what a network is and what we see ourselves in the future. Our mission is to provide a full range of high quality healthcare and related services with a focus on patient satisfaction and continuous improvement. Each of the member medical centers makes a vital contribution to the value and resources of the network. The network also provides support for other VA networks, the Department of Defense, research, and education. Our vision is to be recognized as a healthcare leader valued for our innovative, patient-focused care, our excellence, continuity, and accessibility of services, our integrated, cost-effective, and efficient healthcare, our supportive and dynamic work environment, and our outstanding education and research programs. With these goals in mind and the spirited commitment with which we approach the future, we have embarked on this endeavor together to improve the quality of care and efficiency of service provided to the veterans of New York State. To complement our statewide network of comprehensive services ranging from primary care to organ transplants, from hospital care to nursing home and domiciliary care, we are determined to develop and increase the number of access points. We have other services as well. For example, here in Albany, the Fisher House, the first in the nation built for the VA, provides convenience and comfort to veterans and their families while receiving treatment at the medical center, and virtually every other VA medical center in New York needs a similar home. Several new VA community-based clinics have opened or are being planned, as well as contract and joint ventures with established healthcare entities, and in some instances, Department of Defense facilities already serving veterans, military retirees, and their families. Rochester, Elizabethtown, Sydney, Watertown, the Griffiths Air Force Base, and Jamestown are examples of such access points. Sharing agreements are also being initiated to take advantage of excess capacities and certain scarce medical resources and to improve upon the quantity and quality of other public, nonprofit, and commercial services available to veterans. Mr. Farsetta will add to New York, New Jersey network initiatives. In every instance, the VA is adhering to the state-of-the-art measures for quality. These include the Joint Commission on the Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations and other appropriate certification, credentialing, and privileging of all providers. Another well-known insurance of quality provided by contract providers is the VA survey and inspections of community nursing homes. Besides licensure requirements imposed by New York State, the VA applies its own standards of customer satisfaction, quality and performance, and adherence to approved
programs. Mr. Malthus, could you sort of wrap it up within a few more minutes?
I certainly can. Some VA medical centers have already been formally integrated, and some programs among a group of medical centers have been redistributed in a more rational manner. Collaboration with other VA programs, such as readjustment counseling service centers, and collaboration among neighboring networks are examples of adding value to veterans' health care benefits. I want to perhaps stop there and give my colleague, Mr. Farsetta,
yes, please do,
some equal time. Thank you.
Equal time.
I will not need equal time. I'll just need...
Just before you start, sir.
Sure.
The two gentlemen, Mr. Honorado and Mr. Butler, have you a few moments? Please continue.
Thank you. The New York, New Jersey Vision 3 encompasses a primary service area that services over 1.5 million veterans. Approximately 900,000 live in the downstate New York counties and metropolitan areas. We have a whole variety of specialized medical programs. We have the largest prosthetic treatment center in the VA. The largest spinal cord injury program. We care for more veterans with HIV AIDS than in any other geographic area. We also have the most extensive homeless program in the VA. We were formed in October of 95, and our goal is to provide high-quality, integrated service to the veterans we serve. It is our hope and our expectation, and I think Dr. Kaiser's expectation, that we will form partnerships with all consumer groups, solicit their input, and have them involved in what it is that we are doing. I think, as had been mentioned earlier, the VA is in an arena. We are experiencing perhaps the most revolutionary change in healthcare as we know it. One needs only listen to the debate on television in Congress as it relates to Medicare and Medicaid. One needs only pick up any newspaper and look at the arguments dealing with managed care, primary care, HMOs, the necessity to de-emphasize institutional care, the importance of home care, the importance of outpatient care. And we have a system that we are really need to move in that arena. Well, my concern is that over the next 5 to 10 years, we will no longer be viewed as viable, and someone else will be looking to care for veterans. And I believe in my heart that there is no organization that can provide care for veterans better than the VA or groups that have a specific interest in veterans, because I do think they are special, and I think their needs are special, and I don't think they lend themselves terribly well to individuals who don't understand their special needs. I'll gladly try to respond to any questions that any of you may have, as I'm sure Mr. Malphus will.
Gary?
Yes. For either of you, what progress or point are we on a reimbursement program for insurers such as Medicare, Medicaid, CHAMPIS, into the VA system?
Well, I'm not sure that that we're necessarily anywhere. There have been very strong attempts on the part of literally all forms of government not to get involved in any form of reimbursement to the VA for caring for either Medicare-eligible vets or Medicaid-eligible vets. We had hoped probably about a year ago, Mr. Malphus and I were negotiating with the New York State Department of Health to see if we could not get involved in a pilot program for participating in Medicaid reimbursements, actually get involved in providing health care to vets who are in receipt of Medicaid and the state would pay us. That has really been in a dormant state. I think there is a pilot project that may be coming out to see if we could not participate in a Medicare pilot. But right now there isn't really anything that's going on. We are involved in a VA project which deals with receiving remuneration from third parties. And it's interesting that the New York State VAs collect more basically per capita than any other VA in the system, both the Albany VA, which Mr. Malphus was at, and the Brooklyn VA, which I was at, both received recognition for collecting more money than any other hospitals in our group. Unfortunately, that money does not come to the VA. That money goes back to the Treasury. So we are simply collecting dollars. We think that would provide an excellent revenue stream. So we do not have to rely on the appropriations process. We could essentially generate our own income for taking care of these individuals.
Thank you. Bill?
Yeah, I think you partially answered the question, one of the two questions I have with Gary's question. But let me ask it again. There's been a suggestion of a Veterans Health Care Authority in the state. One of the issues with that health care authority is that it would combine all funding streams that a particular veteran was eligible to support whatever services were appropriate for that veteran. I would like to know what your sense or feeling is for that kind of an approach. So that if I'm a veteran and I come in and I have Empire Blue Cross Blue Shield as an insurance and as a secondary insurance, and I have Medicare as a primary insurance, and then I have some VA eligibility, How would you go about or putting all of those funding streams together to give me the services that I need?
Well, let me take an initial stab at that. I think in part this concept is similar to that proposed in some healthcare reform plans and called single payer. I think it has the benefits of simplicity, less administrative overhead associated with them. There'd have to be some agreement between the various legislative bodies as to sorting out legal entitlements. But what we're existing in right now is a very, very complex arrangement where we bill literally thousands of insurance companies and, as Mr. Farsetta pointed out, are completely unable to bill or collect from any other federal provider other than the Department of Defense. So I think it'd be a streamlining. It'd probably work better for the veterans of New York State.
I agree with what Fred said. In addition to that, it's very clear to us, just looking at the proposed budget for the VA, that the possibility of getting dollars through the appropriation process or additional dollars through the appropriation process is virtually non-existent. So we need to tap into alternative revenue streams, and it is beyond me why either a state government or the federal government would elect to treat veterans in a disparate manner, to essentially tell a veteran that if you elect to seek health care from the VA and you have Medicaid or you have Medicare entitlement, that the VA could not participate in those revenue streams. There were those of us who honestly believed that we could afford a significant savings to the government. We're hoping that if this Medicare pilot ever gets off the ground, that we could actually demonstrate that we could provide care to veterans at a rate that we would bill Medicare that would be considerably less than they would be paying a third party for that same care. But veterans seem to lose their Medicare entitlement once they elect to come to the VA.
And that leads me to my next question. In a sense, what we're talking about is looking at the VA as a sort of a giant HMO, maybe subdivided in some fashion, but it's an HMO. One of the issues that we're currently is being raised in this state, as I'm sure you're aware, are purported gag orders on doctors in certain of the HMOs where they're not supposedly under contract, they're not allowed to discuss alternative treatment plans with patients in that HMO. If we were to do some form of putting all the money together for a veteran, and that veteran is now in the VA hospital or in the VA nursing home or looking at home health care as another option, what assurance would we have that the veteran and not the government determined what service was best?
Let me take the first shot at that one too, and then I'd like to come back and address a specific issue to your first question. I believe that changing the HMO legislation nationally and at the state level, simply to require HMOs to be open panel to veteran providers to enable veterans, for example, to choose a primary care provider that's in the HMO and not in the VA, but to use those special services that exist in the VA should they need them, would be the way to go. That it wouldn't, if you do an adequate job of educating and making sure that veterans are aware that is the case, if it becomes the case, then I think the provider involvement and such requirements that they not discuss other arrangements with patients would not be as meaningful. The other thing I'd like to say is that in most HMOs don't cover long-term care. And so one of the obstacles that we're up against is when a veteran enrolled in an HMO has a stroke, for example. Once their meager benefits from the HMO run out, then we have that veteran for the rest of their life. And that's clearly a disincentive to the effective provision of health care from an overall perspective. The last thing, coming back to your first question, I'd like to point out is the special issue of dialysis. There was an article last week in the Albany Times Union, I assume a national one, which pointed out the great expense of the current Medicare reimbursement system and a correspondingly lack of quality in dialysis as they handle it. Basically, there's a separate payment stream specifically for the act of dialyzing patients. Many of us in the VA have had to restrict access to dialysis services because of our resource availability. We in the VA, however, treat that entire patient, and that's what we would continue to do with healthcare reform or the opening up of Medicare to improve our resources and allow veterans to have freedom of choice.
George?
Yeah. I'd like to make a comment and then ask a couple of questions. The comment I have is that, and this isn't too severe a criticism, I hope, but in my years with veterans and legislation, I find that the VA has the same problem as we as veterans have. We're our own worst enemies. The VA hospital system, like you have the top open heart surgery unit in the world in Massachusetts VA Center. The professor who handles that from Harvard is played completely by Harvard because they want to keep his name on their books because of what he does in open heart surgery. You have one of the top orthopedic hospitals of any kind in Castle Point. You also have hospice centers at Kingsbridge and 23rd Street that I, after so many years, actually found out was being monitored and handled by the technical staff at the New York Medical College. You also have one of the top neurological centers in New Mexico. In other words, very simply, the veterans community and the outside world do not know exactly how good and what you do. I've had private meetings with some of your directors, and it's always been amazing to me. It may be that publicity is required. Now I've got to give a zinger. Because of my background in engineering, 44 years of it, when will I be able to take my card and do two things? One, go into any medical center, VA medical center, and have automatic transfer through an internet. I know you're working on it, but when am I going to be able to do that? The second question I have is, when am I going to be able to go into a Rite Aid drugstore or another after the doctor at the VA has given me a prescription and approval to get it renewed? Why can't I go in there the way I do on my Grumman Northrop retiree plan? Well, I go in there, I push the card in, I pay him $8, and I get any drug that the doctor says I can have.
Well, let me start with that one. I think the veterans encoded credit card, if you will, is probably a year to 18 months away. The VA currently maintains a website on the internet that's open and accessible to anybody who has a computer and internet access, and there are some individual VAs who are also keyed into that internet location for information and advice and so on. So I think it's literally at the first steps of seeing that the VA is there represented and is also communicating and interacting online in the way that so much other business in this country is taken care of. We in the VA, I think the approach that we're going to in the way of prescriptions is going to enable you to skip the process of going to the pharmacy at all. In other words, probably 80% of the prescriptions for patients being seen at the Albany VA Medical Center come to them in the mail. with excellent quality, excellent turnaround, 800 numbers for advice and so on. And I think, I hope within the next 2 years, that system will cover all of the rest of the New York State VA delivery system.
Let me also, since we're talking about New York State, the first item about a card, we are I guess it's Alpha Test, which is the first phase of testing at the Northport VA. So a veteran will have a card, which will be barcoded in a picture, and we'll have certain information on it. And ultimately, we hope to have basically the essentials of the veteran's medical record on that, so they can go into literally any VA, run it through a machine, and get whatever information they they need. Secondly, some of us in our community-based clinics are actually doing what it is that you simply suggested. We have our physician write the prescription that you need, literally for a limited day supply, probably a 4-day supply, and then within the 4 days, all of us in Southern New York are on the same system that Fred is on. We'll get you the rest of the medicine in the mail, so you don't have to go to a VA pharmacy and wait. And I think that's the direction that we're going in. The whole emphasis is on customer service, and that's what we're looking to do.
Mr. Passetta?
Yep.
Lisa?
I have a question with respect to managed care. What, if any, would be the basic or major change in the relationship between the VA network system and the private managed care system? What, if you were to just say, what would be the basic change in the relationship, what would you say it would be between the VA system and private HMO sector?
I know there's this whole concept of what managed care in the community means, and the whole idea of a gatekeeper, and the whole idea of denying someone access to care. That's what a lot of articles have been printing. The whole purpose, at least from I think my perspective and Fred's perspective as it relates to managed care, is what I call continuity of care. One of the largest complaints that we hear from veterans is that we come into your hospital and we never know who we're going to see. Any given day we come in, we could see somebody else. We really don't have a physician to call our own. My concept of managed care is that every patient will have his or her own physician. That physician will have some other individuals, in all probability nurses, some other extenders will be available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, via telephone, so that a veteran can have his or own provider. But whatever services that veteran needs, we will continue to provide. So we aren't saying, well, you no longer can see a subspecialist, you can only see this physician. That really is not the intent. This really is an outgrowth of what veterans have told us that they want. One of the biggest complaints they have about large tertiary care hospitals is that I never get to see my own doctor.
Right. As far as the gatekeeper, would that be on the VA side of things or the HMO side of things, the gatekeeper?
Well, I think there's certainly some evidence that that if you have a single provider who knows you well, they can provide as an individual who can make the appropriate referrals and can know you best and can make sure your care is coordinated.
Right. We definitely like to see that for people, for veterans, for example, with spinal cord injuries.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on the Medicaid issues as far as managed care, not so much with regards to the VA. I'm now getting into it. But one of the things that we do not like about the current system is that for many people, they do not have specialists as gatekeepers. And if you have a spinal cord injury, a simple cold or a simple sweat may not be a simple cold or simple sweat. And if you're not a specialist treating people with those types of disabilities, you may misdiagnose. And so, we just caution that you guys, and we love to work with you to ensure that there's a system that's developed that's fair, and that really secure appropriate care for all veterans in New York State.
Yeah, and I think you raise a very good point. In some of the specialized areas, certainly spinal cord injury, the gatekeeper in all probability will be the staff from the spinal cord injury unit. We're looking at primary care for some of our psychiatric patients, and our patients who have a primary diagnosis that really is psychiatric, the gatekeeper really will be the psychiatrist with an intern team, if the primary diagnosis is not psychiatric, but it may be a secondary diagnosis, then the primary care provider will be an internist or an extender with the psychiatrist on the team, so we could deal with both aspects of the care to that veteran.
My last question is, are you guys seeking federal waivers, or do you need federal waivers in order to operate within the context of which you've described today? And how can we help if that may be the case?
Well, certainly as it relates to some of the reimbursement, there's probably going to have to be a change there's definitely going to have to be a change in the law, whether you do it on the pilot or whether when the states get these block grants, they decide to include the VA in, I don't know, but we could use whatever assistance we can at both a national level and a state level to allow the VA to play and to not deny veterans same access that non-veterans get.
Thank you.
I agree with Jim, and just want to add in terms of the waiver, which I would interpret it as legislation that's needed. I would point out on eligibility, we need reform and simplification. Primary care, doing it right, is and strict adherence to eligibility laws currently would not permit us to do primary care. The change in medical practice, cataract operations, for example, are now outpatient, and the prosthetics eligibility, we strictly interpreted it, would mean that we'd be unable to give those patients glasses. And so we're interpreting them for the benefit of the patient, but there are many, many other examples of where eligibility, it gets in our way instead of helping us because of the rapid change in technology and clinical practice. And then I think in order to do managed care right, we need much more flexibility in the hiring of medical professionals. It's been very difficult for us to hire physician's assistants, for example. We need more local flexibility to set pay scales and other conditions associated with hiring people. Thank you.
Mr. Fassetter, Mr. Malapuris, I think we went long enough. On behalf of this council, let me really thank you for your busy schedule to come here, make these statements, give us an outlook of what is going to happen, what is happening in the VA system. I'm sure it will help us in our deliberations with legislation. And on behalf of the whole committee, thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask one question? And that is that may we submit through you some written questions to these gentlemen that you all them respond to the council on? If I may make that request, and perhaps Mr. Malapuris can come to our next meeting, which is next Wednesday, and if we can get the questions to you fast enough.
I can send somebody, Rick. I'm going to be in a meeting in Baltimore next
week. Yeah. That would be perfectly acceptable, if you would, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I see in our room, and I'm sorry they've been waiting, we have the Honorable Michael J. Hoblock, Jr., the Chairman of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, and we also have the Honorable Ronald C. Tocci, the Chairman of the Assembly Veterans Affairs Committee. Would you both gentlemen like to come down and say a word or two? You're welcome to both to come down. Please. I know that. I see it. Dennis, do you have to leave? 1 minute right after these gentlemen. I want you to be recognized. You do a great job for us. The council wishes to acknowledge Mr. Michael Hoblock, Jr. for being the host of this room today, and the Honorable Mr. Tocci for their support and encouragement of the council and member organization. We really appreciate it, and we thank you. Anything you'd like to say, you're free to say.
Sir. I just wanted to...
But it is being recorded, Mr. Chairman.
No, Michael and I were just talking. We want to really express our gratitude to you, the council, for taking on such a very, very demanding task in helping us to formulate legislation that will bring the kind of services to the veteran population that they deserve. And there's a lot of work to be done, but certainly this is a very, very positive step. And I can only say again, thank God we have people like yourself. You're able to bring the experts to us, get answers, and without you, it would make it a lot more difficult. So on behalf of everybody in my house, and speaking for himself, Mike, but I might mention that it's great to have a counterpart in the Senate that is a veteran, number one, and someone as dedicated and as easy to work with as Mike Hoblock has been. It makes life a lot easier for all of us. And we're hopeful at the end of this session we may have some meaningful legislation in place, and we'll all be able to celebrate with some good things.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just very briefly, Mr. President, Mr. Tocci said it all. I just want to tell you, it must have been a very busy afternoon because this seat is still warm.
It has been.
But I, too, want to extend my thanks and appreciation on behalf of the Senate Veterans Committee and the Senate. And I think, as Ron points out, it's significant that you folks are, for the most part, volunteers and taking your time and talents to devote to these subjects. And as I look at that dais and I see all the organizations being represented, I think that's a significant statement. We've come a long way to be able to pull all of these groups together through their respective representatives to reach a common goal, as opposed to coming at the legislature with 20 different agendas, and that's for the most part why we have difficulty getting things done. So I sincerely want to congratulate you, wish you well. I look forward to the information that you gather, and working with Ron, who has been a pleasure to work with this past year, and I know through 96, to see whether we can come up with some meaningful proposals.
I want you to know that your opening letter, your letter that you sent, the opening statement, was read and it's in the record.
Thank you.
And on behalf of the council, once again, let me say thank you.
Okay. Quick comment.
Gary?
I think both of you were in a room when Mr. Malpress was discussing the reimbursement. Is there any ongoing action in New York State to work with the VA hospitals to get reimbursement on Medicaid to veterans?
We are trying to work out what would be a unified statement from the veterans, the Division of Veterans Affairs, John Meehan, as well as a joint statement from both of our houses. Obviously, we want to do what would be good for the veterans, and with everything so much up in the air in the federal government right now, it makes it that much more difficult to do anything. But any suggestions, advice, we are certainly able.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think, too, we're undergoing some significant change, and the new reports today seem to indicate that there was some break in the impasse on Medicaid as it concerns the distribution from federal to state. And I think every state in the country is beginning to experience what the New York government has been going through the last several weeks on a little different budget year, and they're just starting to catch up to some of that squeeze. So I think we need to see how this all falls out relative to the distribution of those funds.
Because I would think that the VA would have more of a control over waste and fraud if the patients were being, right, you know, reimbursed through them.
No, that's a good point.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Can I just say something? To both you, Ron, and to Senator Hoblock, I think all of us owe both of you a tremendous thanks for your tremendous efforts last year in getting the legislation through and the resolution on Montrose. And I join, I'm sure, with everyone here in the room and throughout the state, say thank you to both of you.
Please rise.
I'd like us to recognize we have, from Queens County Council, Assemblyman Dennis J. Butler. I'm announcing him first for one reason. He had to leave. I want you all to know, though he is not on the Veterans Affairs Committee, he's a veteran's veteran. And please give a nice hand to Mr. Dennis J. Butler. If you wish to say something, Dennis, you're welcome to come down here. Thank you, Dennis. Thank you. Thank you. I also want you to recognize the minority leader of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, Mr. George Honoratus. And by the way, he also is from Queens. George, please say something to us. Say a word to us.
I am the ranking member on the left. And I am budget for this